This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. How's it going, everybody? Pat Loika here. You're listening to Loika Mania, episode 52. Ooh, what an appropriate number. Of course, I'm Pat Loika, and I'm joined by my co-host, cohort, Adam Witt.
Hey, everybody. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Adam. How's it going?
It's going good. Yeah, 52 episodes is a good thing, especially considering what we're doing.
Yes, today we're interviewing a writer involved in DC's New 52. He is quite possibly one of the best cartoonists of our time. He is the man behind such books as Essex County, The Nobody, and, of course, Sweet Tooth. He is, of course, Mr. Jeff Lemire. And Jeff is he has been a fantastic interview, honestly. Lots of interesting process talk, I thought. He really has some really cool insights about the industry itself and working in the industry, and I was very happy to have this whole thing turned out. What do you think, Adam?
Is he the first cartoonist we've interviewed?
I mean, unless you count, in a way, Brubaker's a cartoonist.
Yeah. Well, is he the first guy we've interviewed that like made his bones as a cartoonist? Basically.
Who's still basically an active cartoonist. I think he's our first guy who does it all.
He's got really interesting thoughts on process, and that was kind of what stood out to me with this. Like, I'm a very, very big fan of his work. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the Canadian cartoonists, like him and Seth and Joe Matt, and it was really cool to kind of get into his head and see how he works. And there's some really interesting stuff like that in here. And if anybody's looking forward to his new 52 stuff, like Frankenstein and Animal Man, go back and check out like Essex County and The Nobody, which, you know, I know both of us love, Pat. Uh-huh. And there's some really cool stuff in there.
Yeah. And be sure to check out Sweet Tooth as well. It's such a great, very heartfelt book, you know?
Go ahead, please.
No, I was gonna say there aren't that many books that are like that. You really, you know, it really feels like it comes straight from, you know, the creator's heart. And I think that's such a strong book.
It's neat because it does have kind of a high concept hook. Uh-huh. In terms of, you know, trying to get people into it, but it doesn't read like it's just constantly trying to throw ideas at you. Uh-huh. And I think that's neat. It has a different – I think Lemire's – all of his stuff has a really different feel than anything that goes on out there. He's – you know, even his Superboy, you know, at the beginning, it focuses on this little thing flying through the air, and that's one of the things that he really does. He focuses on the little things, the moments in between moments. He talks a little bit about that too, and yeah, he does really cool work.
Yeah, it's really cool to get into his head and see how he works. And you know, we spent quite a bit of time talking to him, and I think anyone listening to the show would get a kick out of this. Of course, you know, if you're looking to check out any of Jeff's stuff, you can hit up cheapgraphicnovels.com, and you can probably find all his books, including Essex County, The Nobody, and of course Sweet Tooth, and of course his Superboy stuff. And Adam, where can people find you online?
Twitter.com/AdamWitt and then AdamWitt.wordpress.com.
Excellent. Of course, I am still at Twitter.com/PatLoika, or you can find me as well on PatLoika.com and ComicBookNoise.com/LoikaMania for more episodes of the podcast. Again, thanks everyone for all the feedback, all the iTunes reviews. It's really appreciated. Keep them coming because the reviews kind of raise our profile, get us more subscribers, and could lead to better things as well for us. Hope you guys have been enjoying the interviews. Like, we had Paul Carnell previously, and next week we have another special guest that I'm not going to name just yet, but you will find out soon enough if you follow us on all the right places. So again, thank you all for listening. Thank you really for just being around, because you guys are awesome and we love you. Until next week, you guys take it easy. And we are back. This time we are joined by probably one of the most acclaimed cartoonists in the last few years in comics. He has written and drawn books like Essex County, The Nobody, and of course Sweet Tooth from Vertigo. And for a time, he even wrote Superboy for DC, and he's going to be involved with the, you know, the New 52 for DC with Frankenstein and Animal Man. This is Mr. Jeff Lemire. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Excellent. We're of course big fans of your work. Part of what you're known for actually is you know that you are from Canada, and we noticed that there a lot of the your life there has really had a huge effect on your work. And what is it about, I guess a lot of folks write and, they do, their work based on what they know and what they've experienced. What is it about your life, your upbringing in Canada that that you think lends well into your storytelling?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, I just, in the case of Essex County, I think I was specifically trying to write a story about where I came from. And I think over the course of working on that book is sort of where I found my voice, as a storyteller and as a cartoonist. So it's just gone on to inform the rest of my work as well. I don't know if there's something specific about the place that, influences how I tell stories or what, it's hard. Sometimes don't try to analyze things too much. You just kind of let it happen.
And of course, you had originally started out, on doing film school. And what kind of got you into that before you end up doing comics?
I don't know exactly. It was kind of a long and strange path from film to comics. But I guess in high school, when I was looking at what to do afterwards, I knew I kind of wanted to tell stories and stuff. And at the time, I was really into movies. And as strange as it may sound, I think getting a job working in film seemed more realistic to me than doing anything with comics. It just seemed more attainable because at least there was a pretty vibrant film scene going on in Toronto that you could get work in and stuff. So anyways, I went to school for film, and after about 2 or 3 years of doing the program, I really just missed drawing and I missed comics, and I kind of got disillusioned with the filmmaking world sort of, and it just seemed like the kind of stories I wanted to tell were so much more suited for comics, and I could just kind of work on my own, which I really do prefer to work alone, and with film it really is much more collaborative kind of thing. So near the end of my film school program, I just sort of decided that when I graduated I was going to get back into drawing and doing comics, and I never really looked back from there.
Now, I think one of the most interesting things, and something that always stood out to me about your work, particularly in The Nobody, and this may be part of your film school background, is, the kind of long, drawn-out shots that you do. And I think that even translated into your script writing, like on something with Superboy, in that first story you did where, it focuses on that little green flying through the air. And is that something, you linger on shots a lot. Is that something that you think you take from your film school background?
Or I think that's from film. I'm used to, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but in film, I guess, the guys that I was influenced by, people like, Wim Wenders or David Lynch or people like that, who really like to linger on shots and on scenes and let them develop at their own pace. And I think I kind of brought that into how I did comics and how I sort of started making decisions in terms of, what's going on between panels and things. And it just sort of grew to that. And again, like I said, I kind of, the style that I sort of developed and stuff kind of came out of Essex County. And doing that book, I was specifically trying to make things kind of really slow-paced and drawn out because I wanted to sort of reflect the pace of the place, So, again, that just the style sort of developed out of all that stuff and stuck. And then I like how you can control pace and you can control the rate that the readers experience a scene or a moment by the way you arrange panels and stuff. And I like playing around with that a lot.
Yeah, that's really cool. Who were some of the cartoonists who influenced your work a little bit more heavily?
When I first started getting back into comics, like in my early 20s and stuff, I was really into a lot of, the big underground guys at the time, which would be like Chris Ware and Seth and Chester Brown and Dan Klaus and all those guys. And then from there, I sort of started getting into a lot of European people, like Jose Muñoz and Mobius, and then, you know, it just sort of spread out from there. And Paul Pope was a really big influence on me when I first got back into comics. He was sort of really emerging at that time, like late to mid 90s, and his sort of really expressive brushwork was pretty inspiring to me and how I wanted to draw. And you know, I could just keep listing guys forever because I love comics so much. There's just so many people that have influenced me at different points, you know. So
yeah, it's influence is always a hard question. People can go on for a really long time, but no, that's really cool. I always thought I saw Pope in your art, and I didn't want to assume on that, but yeah, I can see, like, it reminds me a lot of his work on The Ballad of Dr. Richardson.
Yeah, I mean, when I was, like I said, this is like around, you know, 1998, 1999 or something, when I first really got back into taking comics seriously, he was, like I said, really sort of the hot new thing on, you know, in the comic scene, and his brushwork and everything was just so energetic, it just made me want to draw again. And so I think a lot of that sort of went into me when I was developing my style, that kind of expressive look and stuff, which of course he took from European and cartoonists and stuff, so I traced it back to that, and then they started influencing me as well, and, you know, it kind of developed into its own thing. So.
Yeah, definitely. And then when you were working on Lost Dogs, you ended up winning the Zurich for that. How do you think that kind of affected the trajectory of your career?
It was a big step because, I mean, at the time I was doing Lost Dogs. I was just working in restaurants around Toronto and barely making rent, you know, and there was no way I would draw all day and stuff, but there was no way I could afford to print up a book and distribute it and stuff on my own. I just didn't have the money. So that grant, if nothing else, gave me a chunk of cash that I could use to actually get something printed. And of course, the Zurich name helps in getting Diamond to distribute the book. And so all that was like a big first step into the, you know, the world of comics and getting something out there that people could read and stuff. And I think it probably helped, you know, with getting top shelf and to look at my work afterwards when I started doing Essex County and stuff. So it was definitely the first step.
Cool. And then with Essex County, did you intend on doing that as a larger set of books, or did you just have the one that you started off with and then it flowered forth?
Yeah. It was just a really small story about the, you know, the first Tales from the Farm storyline was just a small self-contained thing I was going to try to do. You know, as I started working on it, it just sort of flowered into this bigger sort of multi-generational thing that I started making these connections. And so when I started the first book, it was never meant to be a big trilogy or anything. It just sort of grew into that organically as I was working with it.
That's really the best way for it to go, though, to be honest. I mean, you know, it's better that you just kind of let the story tell itself as you're working on it rather than just force it to be in, you know, a certain length. So I think it worked out better for it that you allowed it to expand as it did.
Yeah, and at the time I was, you know, I hadn't done a lot of work yet, so I think if I had the idea of doing this big 500-page thing, it might have been a bit overwhelming, you know, to even start it. Whereas, you know, when I started off just thinking it would be like a 50-page book or something, and it sort of, I think the lack of pressure that put on me helped me sort of relax and let sort of more ideas come and let it develop naturally without me stressing out about it and stuff. So.
Yeah, it was. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Adam.
Oh, and yeah, this might be like a little too close to the vest. But how much of Essex County was autobiographical? I was interested in how much you translated from your life to that.
You know, it's hard to separate at this point, but not a lot plot-wise and character-wise. A lot of it's pretty fictional, but just in terms of the setting itself, it is all real places that I grew up around and stuff like that. And, you know, certain characters are combinations of different people I knew. But it's not as people presume every indie comic is sort of autobiographical or something. And, you know, it's not the case. Although, you know, this does have the feel of that. It's not really a direct autobiography much at all.
Yeah, I got the opposite feel from it. I could tell that you were taken from the setting because I had read about you before, that you came from Essex County and all that, but yeah, it didn't feel like the sort of thing where you were drawing from life. I think you can really tell when some books do that, and with Essex, I didn't really get that feel from it.
No, it's definitely a fiction, you know. But, you know, like I said, a lot of a lot of characters in it might be, you know, exaggerations of people I knew or combinations of different people and things like that. They sort of develop into a new character. So, you know, I was drawing from life in certain ways, but not directly in terms of plot or anything like that.
And after, of course, after your work on Essex County, I think your work really started to blow up, and a lot of people started to gain to notice your work, and led up to you, getting into Vertigo with The Nobody. So, as far as getting into Vertigo, like, were you approached by Karen Berger or anyone from Vertigo, or was it something you had pitched to them?
It's kind of weird. My first editor at Vertigo is Bob Schreck, and he was sort of looking for new projects, and Bob was a fan of a lot of Top Shelf books, so he knew Essex County, and he also knew my friend Matt Kent had done a book called Super Spy that he really liked, so he kind of approached both of us to pitch in some stuff for Vertigo, because at the time they were sort of expanding, trying to do more original graphic novels there, but that's kind of an indie feel to them, so it was just a good timing for me to get my foot in the door there. And he liked The Nobody, and it went through, and I was working on that, and everything was going great. And I guess, again, just timing, he mentioned to me, like, Vertigo was looking to fill some new monthly spots. This should have been, you know, maybe late 2008 or something. They were looking for the next year to fill some monthly slots. And so I pitched Sweet Tooth one Friday afternoon, and it was sort of greenlit by, like, the next Thursday or something, which you can ask other people who work for Vertigo, that never happened that quick. It usually takes months and months of developing something before it ever gets screenlit there. So it was just, I think I just got lucky with timing and just pitching the right project at the right time and stuff. And it all happened really quick, but, obviously it's worked out.
And how long have you been, okay, The Nobody came out in, I think it's in 2009, was it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
Summer, yeah.
How long did it take for you to complete the whole book? Was it something you were kind of working on even before you pitched it, or was this?
No, I had kind of working on the loose idea for that book before I pitched it to Bob, and I just figured if Vertigo didn't accept it, I would just do it as a graphic novel with Top Shelf. But we picked it up, and I think the whole book probably took only about 6 months to do. I'm fairly fast, so it was. You know, I can't remember exactly when this was, but I'm sure it was about a 6-month project. Nobody.
Okay. This is probably one of my favorite Vertigo OGNs since the inception of Vertigo. To be honest, there's a lot of really memorable sequences in this, and the first thing I want to know is, what inspired you to really do your, basically your version of the H.G. Wells, novel, The Invisible Man, what is it about that particular story that you think lends well to your particular skills and your storytelling, basically? What is it about that kind of thing that got you into doing this book?
I think it's kind of it's not a big mystery that I love Joe Kubert. I'm a big fan of his Unknown Soldier. And I just really love drawing that Bandage character so much. When that showcase, the Unknown Soldier showcase came out, I think it was around sometime in 2008 or something, I was just in love with it and drawing the Unknown Soldier in my sketchbook a lot. And I think it all just kind of sprang out of that, me wanting to draw a Bandage face character because it was so fun to draw. And then, of course, I always loved H.G. Wells, who's one of Time Machine and Invisible Man were two of the first books I think I read as a kid. So it all just kind of all happened at the same time where I started reading that book again and just thought, well, why not do like a modern update of this, but take this character and kind of put him in a small town setting like I like to do and see what happens. It was, to be honest, it was more of an aesthetic thing to start where I just like drawing the character and then, the story kind of grew out of that, so... And as a character himself, the Invisible Man or the Bandaged Stranger kind of character, it seemed like such a cool thing to explore because it lends itself to all kinds of themes and ideas about identity and mystery and fun things like that. So I really just wanted to do something kind of a little bit different after Essex County right, sort of took the small town thing and flipped it on its head and sort of showed like the darker side of living in a small town, and thought the best way to do that was to have like a complete stranger show up in town and sort of have people's prejudices and judgments and stuff sort of slowly lead to revealing kind of the darker side of things.
Regarding that, the book, like one of my favorite sequences was the scene where Vicky fell in the water and is drowning and he had to jump in. And just the way you depicted the sequences of him trying to go after her and the band, his bandages getting undone and everything, you know, where it looks like there's no one coming for her. That was just such a great sequence.
Oh, and yeah, that's probably my favorite part of that book.
Yeah, it is such a great sequence. I always look upon that because, without a single word balloon, you're really able to illustrate what's going on. And the fact that the protagonist is, you know, you barely see him because of, you know, what he is, it just made the book so much more. It was much more dramatic. It was much more tense. And you know, when you got to the end of that, you know, that page where there's just where you don't see a trace of him, and you still see the hand reaching out, you're just not sure what happened. So I thought that was really, really well executed. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And also, since you mentioned it, now I want to see you do an Unknown Soldier book.
Yeah, me too.
I think that would be amazing. I mean, even maybe do a feature length graphic novel of it. I would love that. I would certainly buy that. I would tell a lot of people about that. I think you get the sensibilities of that, and you get the storytelling, you know, that's needed for a book like that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, he's a great character. I would love to do something one day with him. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Where did your the kernel for Sweet Tooth come from? What made you want to tell a story in that vein?
That's a tough one. I was working on the Nobody, and it's much like all my stories kind of spring out of just doodles in my sketchbooks, you know, and like with Essex County, and I was just drawing this little kid with a cape and a mask running around the farm, and you know, the whole story sort of sprang out of that. And like with the Nobody, I was drawing the Unknown Soldier a lot and kind of came up with my own story. And for Sweet Tooth, I don't know where the original spark came from. I was drawing this kid with antlers in the woods for some reason. And again, you just sort of build a story out of that. And I'd always wanted to do like a post-apocalyptic thing because I loved those stories growing up. But do sort of like a really slow, quiet take on it and make the characters sort of the focus rather than the world itself. And so, you know, that, and I was also really into, again, really into Jack Kirby's Commandee right around that time. So I think that mixed in there somewhere, you know, The Last Boy on Earth and Human Animal Hybrid and things like that. And I've been doing the Nobody, so I was reading H.G. Wells, and there's The Island of Dr. Moreau. So I think all these different things are sort of swimming around. And when I had to come up with a pitch for Bob, I just sort of threw it all together over the course of the weekend. Sweet Tooth sort of like came out. So.
Oh, that's really cool. Is it harder for you? I noticed that you've had a lot of different artists working on it. Is it harder for you to shift from doing it all yourself?
No, Sweet Tooth is mostly me, and you know, lately I had a couple of people sort of help me out, but they're all such close friends of mine that I'm bringing on from sort of indie comics and stuff that I know personally so well that they're people that I completely trust, and I know their work so well that I know what I'm going to get when I sort of work with them and stuff. So it's not hard for me to let go there.
Yeah, something that stood out to me about it, I remembered seeing the preview solicitation for the first issue and reading it, and I liked your work, but I was like, this is, you know, I don't know what to make of it. And then I picked up the first trade, and it's, you've probably got like the strongest first arc of any Vertigo story that I can think of, because I really didn't know what to make of it. And then I sat and I read it, and I was just complete. I think I tore through it in about a half an hour, like in one sitting.
Yeah.
Like in a hotel lobby, I was just like awestruck by it. Was that something that you really want to give it a strong opening hook, or did it just kind of happen that way? Because it's perfectly constructed. It really is.
I don't know if I was. I probably should be more conscious, like commercial things like that. But I think that's just the way the story sort of naturally happened. But you know, I mean, obviously, I'm somewhat conscious that I need to give readers a reason to come back and everything. So I'm sure I was thinking about it, but that opening arc always was sort of came naturally out of the story itself, and it was always going to end like the way it did, and things like that.
Do you usually have an ending in sight for the longer stories that you come up with, something like Hasek's?
Yeah, I always do. I usually get the beginning and the ending, and then sort of work out the middle part. And that's definitely with Sweet Tooth. I've always known the ending, where it's going. It's just a matter of the middle part sort of switches and moves around and expands and things as I go. But it's still heading towards the same spot. As a writer, I don't know how people can work without knowing where they're going, where the characters are going and stuff. That's just sort of how my brain works at a story. So I always get my endings, and I always knew what the ending of my Superboy run would be, and I know what the ending of my Animal Man run will be whenever that is. And I need to know that so I can kind of put the characters on a path and let it unfold.
Fantastic. Speaking of Animal Man, did you have any Adam? Or do you have anything else with regards to Sweet Tooth, or did you want to jump?
That about covers it. And thank you for making such a cool book.
Yeah, it is.
Thanks.
It really is such a great book, and I'm hoping you do well with the Harveys.
Oh, thanks.
And so you mentioned Animal Man. Of course, this is one of the two books you're working on for the new 52 with DC. I was curious to see if. What were these books pitched to you by DC, or were these books that you kind of went to DC and said, hey, I'd like to do these books?
One of each. I mean, Frankenstein was something I actively pitched. I originally pitched it as part of the Flashpoint thing. Mm-hmm. They came at me with a couple ideas for some of the Flashpoint stuff I might be able to work on, and I wasn't crazy about them. Mm-hmm. And some of the characters I really wanted to try to bring back an update for DC at one point would have been the Creature Commando. So I pitched Creature Commando's miniseries as part of Flashpoint, which they really liked. And I can't remember who it was at editorial, but someone suggested that I put the Grant Morrison version of Frankenstein in the team instead. And as soon as they said that, it all sort of clicked together, because that was one of my favorite little books of the last, 10 years or so, was that Doug Mankey, Grant Morrison, Frankenstein miniseries. So I jumped at that, and then that went well, and they liked that. So when the new 52 stuff started happening, again, they were kind of tossing some ideas of things I could work on, and I pitched the Frankenstein miniseries because I was having so much fun with the Flashpoint thing, and I wanted to kind of keep going with some of the new characters and stuff. So that one I pitched, and Animal Man was one that they sort of came at me with out of nowhere after almost the last minute, too, because I was going to be working on something else instead. And as soon as Bob Harris called me one day and mentioned Animal Man, I jumped at that one because I love all the early Vertigo, pre-Vertigo days at DC with Swamp Thing and Animal Man and Sandman and stuff were just sort of in their prime, and the chance to kind of continue some of those stories and work with some of those characters, something I wasn't going to pass up. So, and at the same time, I thought Animal Man was a really good fit for me because it deals with family and it deals with a lot of things that I like to address in all my other work as well. So it seemed like a good fit. And so one of each, one was pitched and one they offered me, and I couldn't be happier with those two books. And I don't think there's anything else I'd rather be writing at DC right now.
I could really tell that, the giving you Animal Man, it was really, I think they were really paying close attention to your work at that point, because you really excel with dealing with, with some of the more offbeat superheroes and just, the setting of the family that Animal Man is in. Now, will you be addressing anything of what came before, or are you really just going to approach this fresh? Are you going to be treating this more like the Grant Morrison run, or the more cosmic level Animal Man that we've seen in the last few years?
Not the cosmic one, for sure. I mean, I want to keep it really grounded. I want to make it about him as like a parent and a husband as the primary focus of the book, and I don't think having him running around space really brings that out. So it's really about him at home and with his family, and the family themselves, Ellen, Maxine, and Cliff, they're all just as big of a character in the book as Buddy Baker is, and so it's really about the family, and it's about them sort of traveling across America and trying to stay together amid a lot of really horrible things happening. And in a lot of ways, I've mentioned this a lot lately, but it's very much a horror comic as opposed to a superhero one, and it's a very dark book, and you know, it's just like with Sweet Tooth, you shine out dark, you put characters in a really dark spot, and you kind of see the good kind of rise up out of them, and that's sort of what I want to do with the Baker family, and put them through a really hard time, and then kind of push them and see how far they can go before they start to fall apart as a family, and you know, that's kind of the focus of the book for me. And in terms of what's come before and what has continuity and whatnot, it's sort of a gray area right now with the New 52 as to what has and hasn't happened in the past in continuity. So I'm just sort of approaching it as if everything in the past happened, but I don't necessarily need to talk about it all the time. It's just, and you definitely don't need to have read any past Animal Man stories to pick up number one and enjoy it. So you want it to be new and accessible, but at the same time, you don't want to ignore all the old-time fans, so there are nods to everything that's come before as well.
Yeah, that is kind of a dip. That's kind of a tightrope that you have to walk, especially with, you know, with these, you know, famous and established characters. So I think just kind of keeping away from that topic would probably be the best way to go. Without, as long as you don't outright say it's, you know, it never happened. With Animal Man, like, okay, he's you said they're going to be traveling. They won't be, you know, they're. Basically, they won't be in San Diego anymore. So it's going to be
It starts in San Diego, and then some stuff obviously happens in the first few issues that kind of puts them on the run from something that I won't reveal. But they're kind of running from something and trying to find something at the same time. And as a result, they're sort of traveling across America, and you know, we get to see a darker side of the DC universe as they go. And yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. Now, with Frankenstein, you were pitching this one. How much of an influence has Grant Morrison's version of the character been to you? Because I've seen some of your Flashpoint stuff, and clearly, you know, his take on it really did influence your work.
I loved his take on the character a lot, and that's the whole reason I wanted to do it, was because I thought it was such a great version of Frankenstein, and. Mm-hmm. And I always was so disappointed that at the time that DC didn't do more with that version of the character, because I love those four issues that he did so much. So, it's a big influence on sort of my starting point is where he left off, and then hopefully I can take it into some new places, you know, and add my own ideas to it and build up a supporting cast around them that I think are much, the Frankenstein character is very much the Grant Morrison version. The new supporting cast, the Creature Commandos, are very much me. And so, again, it's kind of like this weird, dysfunctional super team now with the Creature Commandos. And it's really pretty much the opposite in every way of Animal Man. Animal Man is a very dark, very slow, very serious, very intense book, whereas Frankenstein is completely over the top action and science fiction and just really big sci-fi ideas and huge fights and a lot of black humor. And, you know, so it's kind of fun to be working on two books that are very different in tone, because I get I don't get as bored as easily that way. And I get to sort of, stretch different muscles with each one.
You also mentioned earlier that you're used to, you're used to working on your own, and you prefer working on your own. Here you're working with collaborators like Travel Foreman and Alberto Ponicelli. How is it working with these guys compared to, you know, working by yourself? Of course, you have more control when you're on your own, but have you been enjoying working with these two guys, like, you know, receiving artwork from them all the time by email or something?
Yeah, it's super fun. I mean, drawing takes a long time. Drawing a comic takes a long time, and it's really, really labor intensive. And just to be able to write and hand it off and have someone else do all that work is really nice. I'll be honest, especially when it's guys you can trust and whose art you actually really love, like Alberto and Travel. They're just doing incredible stuff. So it's really fun for me to send off my stuff and then see it come back and see what they add to it and how they expand upon my ideas, and then kind of get inspired by that, and then I take my stuff, my next script up the notch, and to reflect what they're doing, and so it's been really fun. And of course, at the same time, I still get to do Sweet Tooth every month, where I do get to do everything. So I kind of get the best of both worlds. I think if I was just writing for other artists, I probably wouldn't be very satisfied. But the fact that I get to do my own thing and then do that as well, it's really fun.
Yeah, I love the choice of artists that you have for both books. Travel Foreman's like not the person I would even think of for an Animal Man book. But then when you see his stuff, like that cover.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. Wait till you see some of the stuff coming up in issues 2 and 3 that he's doing. It's just, he's bringing so much imagination to it. It's I'll just have like a simple, pretty straightforward idea in a script, and I'll get the art back, and he'll do something so incredibly unique with it that I have to up my game, and then I sort of expand the idea based on what he's drawn, and new storylines and new plot elements sort of grow out of the art, and it's been really fun for me to work like that.
Yeah, actually with Travel, I kind of want to expand a bit. He has such a great sense of design when it comes to pages, and I was curious. I mean, obviously you've already done, by this time you've already done at least maybe a couple of issues with him. Like, have you adapted to, or have you thought?
No, I don't try to. I think I know what you're asking. My scripts don't reflect his storytelling style or his visual style. I just let the scripts be kind of open and simple in terms of the description of stuff, so that he has the room to do that. I don't want to get in his way or try to write specifically for him, because, quite frankly, I don't really know how his creative process is or his decision-making process. Mm-hmm. So I kind of take the opposite tact, where I just sort of keep panel descriptions and page descriptions very vague and simple, and focus instead on character and on dialogue, and let him make those decisions.
Excellent. And so you're basically giving him more room to work rather than that's excellent. And you could tell, like, I can, he's one of those guys, like, when I've seen his work in other books before, I could really tell that he's really kind of taking point as far as the look of the each page. So
yeah, he's really he's doing stuff I could never imagine in the script anyway. So mm-hmm. I know what his strengths are, and I know what mine are, and for this book, my strength is definitely the voice of the family and the different people in the family and the characters. So I'm focusing on that and letting him really just take point with the visuals and just go nuts, and then I adapt to what he does. And you know, I've never had that kind of a collaboration with anyone before. It's been very, very rewarding, and it's so fun to see the art come back, because it's so much better than what I had in my head, you know.
I'm really looking forward to it, man. And with Frankenstein, you're working with Alberto Ponticelli, and you mentioned it's a different turn. I mean, a different type of book from Animal Man. And Ponticelli's stuff is, I mean, his style. I mean, his storytelling is a bit more on the traditional side, but his art is very, how do I say it? It's more visceral. And it's
that's exactly what Frankenstein needs to be, because he's such a. I mean, what I love so much about that original miniseries, to be perfectly honest, as much as I love Grant Morrison, I love that book because of Doug Mankey.
Oh, yeah.
I love Doug Mankey, and Alberto kind of has that same aesthetic, where it's that really raw kind of, again, just very visceral, really muscular kind of mm-hmm. artwork. Not in like the, you know, 90s image kind of way mm-hmm. muscular, but more in like a European heavy metal kind of look. And, he's just perfect for drawing monsters. This book needed to be someone who loves drawing monsters, because there's lots of them. So, his storytelling style is very simple, very straightforward, which mine is as well usually, so that's fine with me. And instead, he just lets the drawings just be big and powerful and full of energy. And, yeah, you'll see this, some of the double-page spreads and stuff he's doing, just monsters fighting monsters, and just the funnest, biggest stuff I've ever seen. It's great. I think he was, you know, he came from doing Unknown Soldier, ironically, mm-hmm. at Vertigo, a couple years ago or last year, and that was an amazing book, but I don't think he really got to have fun and stretch his, the sort of that side of things, and so he's really embraced it, and it looks terrific.
This is the first straight ensemble book you've done. I mean, a lot of your stories focus on family and things like that, but this is a team book. How much of a creative departure is that for you? Like, how did you have to change your thought process?
I like team books a lot. I mean, I'll be honest, Superboy wasn't technically a team book, but I kind of made it a team book. I instantly introduced the three best friends and just turned them into this weird little small-town super team, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was writing that book as if it was a team book anyway, so it wasn't much of a... And Sweet Tooth has become a team book in a lot of ways, because it started off focusing...
I didn't really think of that. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it started off focusing on the two main characters, but it grew into this sort of family. I love the family thing, right? So I love the idea that the superhero team has a weird dysfunctional family, and that's what sort of Frankenstein's team will slowly become. So
And when you started working on more stuff like Superboy and, you know, just your DC work in general, had you done scripts before for comics when you were working on your own work and when you were working on your own projects, or was that just something you shifted over to doing and kind of had to teach yourself how to do?
Sorry, I apologize. I missed that bit.
Oh, sure. When you shifted over to doing things like Superboy and your other DC work, did you have to learn how to do scripts, or had you worked on scripts for your own, for the things
that you were
going to draw yourself?
I write full scripts for myself on Sweet Tooth.
Oh, really?
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't really need to, but I find that just in terms of writing dialogue and just getting in the flow of a story, I find creatively it just works really well for me to sit down and write in full script. And of course, as I'm drawing it, I change a lot of what I wrote in the script, and I'm constantly tweaking it and stuff. But so I kind of was kind of used to doing the script format. But at the same time, when I do my scripts for myself, I don't put any visual description at all, because obviously I'm drawing it myself. So there was a real learning curve there, I think, on the Atom and then on Superboy stuff, where I had to kind of let go of the visual side of things, which I've done now with Travel and Alberto. I think I've embraced them, you know, and their strengths, and just kind of let go and focused on, you know, like I said, character and plot and dialogue and stuff, and let them take point on the visual stuff. But I think with some of the early Superboy stuff and the Atom, I was really still really trying to control the visual side of it with the scripting, and maybe as a result, those books weren't as strong as they could be at times. So if anything, it wasn't so much learning how to write in script format. It was just learning how to let go of the visual side of the book and trust in my collaborators and stuff. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And what kind of things did you look at to figure out what kind of scripting style worked for you?
I'll be honest. I asked Jeff Johns if he could send me one of his scripts, because I didn't know what kind of format that DC wanted.
No, that's it.
He sent me like a Black as Night script. This is like when he had just finished that, and just to get the format. And I just copied the format of that, and you know, yeah.
Yeah, that works.
Good to have friends like Jeff Johns.
Go ahead, Pat.
I was going to say. Also, I mean, since I think the first I've heard of you, Jeff, was through podcasts and all that. How much of a help has your online presence and through podcasts and through Twitter and all that been a good help to your raising your profile over the last couple of years? Because over the last few years, that we've really seen a lot of books doing well and a lot of promotion going on through online. Has that been a really big help to you as you were kind of getting your stuff out for Essex County and then the Nobody and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, with Essex County, I'll be honest, I didn't even have a computer then. And it was so broke, and I didn't have email or anything until, 2008 or something. So I wasn't using that stuff at all then. Mm-hmm. But as I got into doing Sweet Tooth and stuff, I realized that, Twitter and blogging and everything, it's just another way for fans to become involved with the book and sort of interact with you and to get people excited about things. So, yeah, I do try to use that stuff to help raise awareness. And also, I just think it's a nice, like when I was growing up, there was no way, like, guys I loved when I was a kid, like George Perez or Marv Wolfman or these people that I loved, like, there was no way I could ever contact them or interact with them. I love how today someone can just reach out through Twitter and ask me a question, and I can answer it. And I like the accessibility. Sometimes it gets a bit of much too, and I have to stay away from
I heard of you basically through various podcasts, and I'm glad that you're kind of, like some of your more personal works have been getting more play and a lot more notice because of that. So it's pretty amazing that a book like Sweet Tooth can exist right now because of with the help of stuff like that.
Yeah.
With that in mind, though, before we close that, was there any where can people find you online?
I got my blog. It's just Jeff Lemire at blogspot.com, which is mostly what I do. It's mostly where you can find me. And Twitter, it's just Jeff Lemire at Twitter. I'm technically on Facebook, but I hate Facebook.
Yeah, that's the common answer right now when it comes to Facebook.
I'll apologize to anyone here listening who has ever tried to send me a message on Facebook or anything, and I don't respond. It's because I just check it like once every 3 months, and I have like 90 messages, and I can't deal with it, so I just So, yeah, Twitter is mostly the best way to keep track of me, I guess.
And Adam, did you have a final question for Jeff?
Yes, Jeff. If you were to wake up with antlers tomorrow, how would you react?
Yeah. Well, first of all, who's to say that I didn't wake up with them today? You guys can't see me right now. But how would I react? I would immediately buy a shotgun and go to the woods.
Oh, man. And once again, Jeff, thank you very much for coming onto the show and chatting with us. I'm looking forward to Animal Man and Frankenstein. Again, those books look amazing, and I can only imagine how good the scripts are going to be because of all the work you've done before.
Yeah, thanks. I can honestly say, you know, there's so much hype right now with this new 52, and everyone's trying to pimp their books and everything, but I'll say quite honestly, anyone who likes my work, these two books, Frankenstein and Animal Man, are by far the best things I've ever done, you know, in the DC universe, and I'm really, really proud of how both of them are coming out, so I think hopefully fans won't be disappointed.
I'm pretty sure they won't, and of course we'll be talking them up as they come out, because seriously, your books are some of the books I'm really excited about from that whole launch, just because they're so offbeat and so different, and you know, and we need more books like those, you know, just based on
I'll give DC credit. They've really let me be myself on those two books and stay out of my way, you know, and supported me when I needed it, but let me bring my voice to those characters, and I'm glad they're doing more of that with this. Sort of, they have a renewed sort of interest in letting creators take chances and stuff right now, and I think it's going to bode well for the new launch.
Excellent. And again, thanks again, Jeff, and we will talk to you soon.
Great. Right, thanks, guys.
All right,
bye-bye. Bye.
Cussing a stone in a cocktail dress your mother wore when she was young. Red Southern Saint around your neck, a whip martini in a paper cup, you're a wasp nest.